And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Wanted to welcome you to this version of the Earth First Update on Thursday, January 12th. And I'd like you to have a pencil and paper handy, because you might want to take down a name, address, a telephone number, a web page, maybe even the name of the malcreant, so that you can get out there and take some action. Start off with announcements, and unfortunately this week I have a sad announcement, and that is that Andrew Rodman, also known as Slug Thang, the Earth First poet on call, is dead at the age of 54. From one of his poems, "The surf spit me back to the shore, grateful for the experience." Andrew Rodman died peacefully at home in Portland on January 7th at the age of 54. He maintained his usual irreverent sense of humor and positivity to the end, and still had hope of staving off cancer right up to the day before he fell into a deep, restful sleep. Just days before, he had declared he would go to the Owyhee River next summer. Andrew was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and made homes in Newport and Portland, Oregon, while working as editor-in-chief of In Good Tilth magazine for the Oregon Tilth Group. He is survived by his wife, Terry, his parents, Beverly and Malcolm, his brother, Larry, and his sister, Laura, and nephew, Evan. Andrew had the most monumental heart this side of the Cascades, filled with his love for forest protection and for his Earth First family that gave him community. He had a love for the ocean, and he married the sea, sanctioning it with a surfboard in tow. He found spirit at Yakana Head, just off of the Riptide, as this was his sacred place. He always had ambitions to lure his terrified wife out to that particularly watery real estate to share a certain light beyond the beach. Where does a body go to get wet in the nectar of wilderness, to reconnect with wildness at its core? For me, it is here, in the frothy, watery wilds of the near shore. Here it is, dark currents of dread and wonder. Little did anyone know, except for those who were blessed to be near him, that Andrew was secretly famous for his poetry, paintings, plays, and performances. His art and poems reflect our current times with his love of the sea, organic agriculture, and the environmental impact bestowed upon our beautiful planet. His words were prolific, profound, ludicrous, playful, and absurd. His mom once said, "There's one thing that puzzles me. Your poems and art are so dark, but you're such a sweet guy. It's weird." Andrew said he did not have a bucket list because he did everything he wanted. As a creative spirit, he chimed, "I'm a wild salmon, baby, virile and free." His father once said that Andrew had retired before beginning his career, quitting whatever work he had at the time for adventures that took him around the world, from the west to the east to the northern lights. He followed many rivers, he paddled, he guided, he fell in the drink, and he got up. Andrew grabbed life by the balls and never let go. He slammed the door on prognoses and gave his eternal middle finger that said, "I'm not dead yet." He had a rare ability to grok his life and gave daily thanks for his enormous community and family, his wife whom this planet spun around, and his prosperity. He thanked God daily that he was not living under a bridge. He met Terry 6 years ago and received his cancer diagnosis only 4 months later. 11 months to live, they said, underestimating Andrew and Terry's lust for life and each other and their joy upon their rare, weird union. Friends and family say his wife extended his flame, but in truth he extended hers, and together they both burned like the northern lights. They never gave in, and they never gave up. Please join us in celebrating his life at the Performing Arts Center in Newport, Oregon, on Saturday, February 4th at 7 p.m. Once again, that celebration will be in Newport, Oregon, at the Performing Arts Center on Saturday, February 4th at 7 p.m. And get involved with monitoring Sinbad Creek in Sunol. The Alameda Creek Alliance is hosting a community meeting in Sunol to discuss upcoming creek monitoring efforts on Sinbad Creek. Join us on Wednesday, January 25th in the cafeteria of the Sunol Glen School at 11601 Main Street in Sunol from 7 to 8:30 p.m. to learn how you can participate in these efforts. Our goal is to collect baseline information on Sinbad Creek and to see how it is changing over time. We'll discuss our plans to map Sinbad Creek, monitor macroinvertebrates, that's insects, that live in the creek, monitor water temperature and flow, measure bacteria, and address concerns with invasive plants. We need volunteers for these efforts. Please join us, and that's the Alameda Creek Alliance, on January 25th to add your voice to the discussion and to learn how you can get involved. Once again, that's January 25th at the Sinol Glen School, 11601 Main Street in Sinol, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And watch for fish in Alameda Creek. In the recent winter storm, stream flow in Alameda Creek is high enough for steelhead trout to try and migrate upstream through the flood control channel in lower Alameda Creek. Please keep an eye out at the Bart Weir in Fremont and other portions of the flood control channel for steelhead during winter storms. Adult steelhead have typically been seen in the lower creek from January through March trying to ascend the Bart Weir after a major storm on the declining end of the flow, typically when stream flow is about 200 to 400 cubic feet per second. You can check the current Alameda Creek stream flow on the web in Lower Niles Canyon and in the flood control channel in Union City. See the webpage at alamedacreek.org for what to do if you spot fish in the creek. And the next Alameda Creek Restoration Day will be January 21st. Volunteer with the Alameda Creek Alliance for a morning of habitat restoration along Alameda Creek on Saturday, January 21st from 11 a.m. till noon at the Niles Staging Area in Fremont. Meet at 10 a.m. at the Niles Staging Area parking lot along Old Canyon Road near Canyon Oaks Court in the Niles area of Fremont. The address is roughly 720 Old Canyon Road and will work till noon. We'll be clearing invasive plants, planting native shrubs and plants, and doing some general cleaning around our adopted restoration site. This continues past work by ACA volunteers, and your efforts will enhance habitat for fish and wildlife along Alameda Creek for years to come. Please wear long pants and sturdy closed-toed shoes that can get dirty. Please no sandals or flip-flops. We provide gloves and tools. The work isn't on much of a slope, but the ground can be uneven. The ground will likely be wet, so please wear clothes that can get dirty and muddy. There is no poison oak in the immediate area where we'll be working, but expect cool weather and morning dew when we start. Heavy rain cancels the event. All participants need to have a signed waiver form with the Alameda Creek Alliance and with Alameda County, and anyone under 18 needs a parental signature. For more information and how to sign up for these events, go to alamedacreek.org. That's www.alamedacreek.org. And the Earth Forest Organizers and Winter Rendezvous is February 7th through the 14th this year. The Hudson Valley Earth Forest Group will be hosting the 2017 Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous this February 7th through 14th. Get ready for awesome workshops, winter hikes, music campfires, and lots of fun, smiley face. We are raising money to host 75-plus people for a weekend-long gathering of Earth Firsters, eco-defenders, and Earth-loving rebels. They don't say it here, but please bring money. They're going to need a lot of it for these cabins. Nestled in the Catskill Mountains within the Hudson River watershed, we have reserved heated cabins to exchange in important movement discussions and provide a space to plug into existing campaigns and projects in our bioregion. And if you'd like to donate, go to fundly.com, that's FUNDLY.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund. That's fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action notice, February 14th through the 20th of this year. Please mark your calendars and join us for our upcoming Week of Action, February 14th through the 20th. We are planning events in southwest Montana towns, and there will be a national event for everyone everywhere to take part in. We welcome your ideas, and we need your energy and participation. Here is the tentative schedule of events and locations. More details will be available on the website in the coming weeks, and if they're timely posted, I will read them on the Earth First Update. Tuesday, February 14th, there will be a rally in Bozeman, Montana. Wednesday, February 15th, a march and candlelight vigil in Gardner, Montana. Thursday, February 16th, is the National Call-In Day across the nation and activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign. We will host trainings in nonviolence and Know Your Rights at BFC headquarters in West Yellowstone. Friday, February 17th, there will be a special event in Helena, Montana. Those are always fun. Saturday and Sunday, February 18th and 19th, there will be rallies in West Yellowstone, Montana, with storytelling, culture sharing, and other activities in the Buffalo Field Campaign. And on Monday, February 20th, there will be a rally in Big Sky, Montana. Please join us for any or all of these events. Tell your friends and bring them with you. If you are able to come for the full week and would like to stay with the Buffalo Field Campaign, please send an RSVP to Stephanie. Her email address is media@buffalofieldcampaign.org or McKinsey. His email address is volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org. So that we can make accommodations for sleeping spaces and food, please bring your own bedding. For more details and exact times, please visit our events calendar, and you can find that at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Once again, that's buffalofieldcampaign.org. They are the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the U.S. And here's the Wilderness Watch news. Help stop massive tree cutting in the Owyhee wildernesses. The Bureau of Land Management is proposing a drastic tree clearing project across 47,000 acres of wilderness in the Big Jacks, Little Jacks, North Fork of the Owyhee, Owyhee River, and Pole Creek wildernesses in the Owyhee Canyonlands region in Idaho. We encourage you to submit a public comment opposing this project before the January 18th deadline. That's coming up real fast, folks. The BLM is considering three options in its draft environmental impact statement. Broyo Owyhee Sage Grouse Habitat Project. Alternative A wouldn't do anything. Leave everything as it is. Probably the best thing to do. Alternative B would significantly reduce juniper forests across 600,000 acres, including 47,000 acres of wilderness. And Alternative C would only clear the 600,000 acres outside of the wilderness. The BLM is proposing to remove native juniper forest to modify habitat to ostensibly benefit sage grouse, although it's questionable whether juniper removal would benefit the bird. BLM claims junipers compete with the grouse's preferred sagebrush and grassland habitats and provide perching habitat for native raptors that prey on the grouse. All junipers would be cut except for very old ones and those growing in rock outcrops. The BLM would use chainsaws and large cutting equipment outside of the wilderness and handsaws on the 47,000 acres inside the wildernesses. Even though BLM proposes to do the work with handsaws and access the wilderness on foot or horseback, this ill-conceived idea violates the letter and the spirit of the Wilderness Act. The project would significantly alter the untrammeled or wild character of these five wildernesses, which the Bureau of Land Management is charged with protecting. Of the three alternatives to the draft environmental impact statement, Wilderness Watch supports A, the no-action alternative. We encourage you to oppose this project and urge the BLM to take other meaningful actions that would benefit both sage grouse and the Owyhee wilderness, such as the BLM needs to determine the root causes of sage grouse decline and find alternatives to killing native junipers and intensively manipulating vast areas of wilderness. BLM's analysis needs to adequately address the extent to which this will be a perpetual and ongoing project. If the trees grow back, which is likely, more cutting will be done in an unending manipulation of wilderness. BLM should drop the proposed juniper removal project and instead take other meaningful measures, such as removing domestic livestock grazing in areas important to sage grouse, both within and outside of Owyhee wildernesses. And the BLM should allow natural fires to burn so that the natural ecological processes that have sustained sage grouse and the diversity of habitats for millennia can continue to do so. If we manage wilderness in the same way we manage lands outside the wilderness through active manipulation, we lose the untrammeled baseline and what is natural for that area at any point in time. Bureau of Land Management's desire to convert this landscape to a condition it deems more desirable than what nature provides represents the antithesis of appropriate wilderness stewardship. Please go to our website to take action. That's www.wildernesswatch.org. Once again, www.wildernesswatch.org. And you need to do that before January 18th. And here's news from Klamath Siskiyou Wild. The Kalmiopsis and Wild Rivers Coast are protected from mining for 20 years. Cheers to Wild Rivers. Today we are extremely excited to announce that Public Land Order 7859 was signed by Obama officials protecting the headwaters of the Smith and Illinois Rivers and Hunter Creek for 20 years from the threat of industrial strip mining. We could not have done it without your outstanding support on signing petitions, attending public hearings, and supporting all the efforts leading to this momentous decision. We thank you. We also extend a huge thank you to our coalition partners and our river champions, especially Representatives DeFazio and Huffman and Senators Merkley and Wyden, and they're from Oregon. If you're excited as we are, please take a minute to thank them, too. And what's next for the Kalmiopsis Rivers? These spectacular rivers provide clean drinking water to downstream communities. They are a home to healthy salmon and steelhead runs, and the rivers that surround them are some of the most unique plant habitat in the West. We will continue to work hard to defend this victory against attack and for more permanent protection from mining in the years to come. You can find information and how to thank all those Congress and senators at www.kswild.org. That's kswild.org. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. The country's last wild buffalo, America's newly designated national mammal, are in grave danger. Yellowstone National Park has begun capture for slaughter operations and plans to kill hundreds of wild Yellowstone buffalo in the coming weeks, all to appease the interests of Montana's livestock lobby. Capture operations at Yellowstone Stevens Creek Bison Trap began Saturday, January 7th. Buffalo Field Campaign field patrols in the Gardner Basin report that 84 wild buffalo are currently captive in the trap. Yellowstone and other bison managers plan to slaughter or domesticate, if a controversial quarantine plan is approved, upwards of 1,300 of these sacred beings this winter, all in an effort to appease the intolerant and unfounded fears of the powerful Montana livestock industry. In addition to capture, wild buffalo face other fatal dangers if they migrate across Yellowstone's boundary into Montana. Like other migratory ungulates, buffalo must leave the park in order to survive the harsh winters. Less than a mile from Yellowstone's trap, just outside the boundary, hunters wait to make their kills. As buffalo migrate into lower elevation habitat, they are met with gunfire. Buffalo are never able to make it far before being shot or spooked by hunters, which causes them to flee back into Yellowstone and into the clutches of the trap. There is no safe place for wild buffalo in the Gardner Basin. Capture operations are going to interfere significantly with state and treaty hunting, which is currently in full swing. Wild buffalo are being hunted along Yellowstone's border by hunters who hold Montana tags and by four native tribes, the Confederated Salish, Kootenai, Nez Perce, Shoshone, Bannock, and the Umatilla Confederacy, who hunt buffalo under treaty rights. Hunters are extremely upset that Yellowstone has opened its trap doors so early, and most join the Buffalo Field Campaign in being adamantly opposed to any capture of wild migratory buffalo. While the Buffalo Field Campaign does not agree with the way buffalo hunting is currently taking place, given the limited landscape, small buffalo population, and firing line-style hunts, we do hope that we will strengthen our common ground with hunters and be able to bolster solidarity efforts aimed at ending the trapping of wild buffalo for good. Unfortunately, the limited landscape where buffalo are allowed to roam facilitates highly unethical hunting practices, which not only manifest in gunning down of wild buffalo at Yellowstone's borders, but forces the buffalo to flee back into Yellowstone and become trapped by park officials. In the midst of such management practices, wild buffalo have nowhere to roam in the Gardner Basin without being shot or captured. Buffalo are bottled up in the Gardner Basin with no escape due to livestock policies. Hunters compete for few buffalo on the landscape while also racing to beat Yellowstone's lethal capture operations at the trap. With such insanity playing out on the land, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that Montana's livestock industry and the bison management plan that it has forced on Yellowstone are the true forces responsible for the killing of wild buffalo. Whether through hunt or so-called government management actions, the result is the same. Buffalo are reduced to meat, The land is robbed of one of her best caretakers, and the livestock industry gloats with satisfaction. At a fundamental level, Montana and its cattle culture of control and intolerance are to blame. Our combined efforts must focus on changing and challenging this status quo of the Interagency Bison Management Plan. Any action that does not fight this intolerance and excessive killing, or that fails to advocate for the buffalo's ability to live and move freely on the lands that are their birthright, poses a threat to the buffalo's long-term survival and evolutionary potential. Montana has played their cards in such a way that they aren't feeling much of the heat anymore. Instead, all the entities who should be the strongest allies for the wild buffalo, native peoples, subsistence hunters, Yellowstone National Park, and buffalo advocates, are pointing fingers at each other. It's the same old game of divide and conquer. Let's not be fooled. Let's gather our strengths and focus. Montana is our target, and our aim must be true. To start, we must repeal MCA 81-2-120 and remove the Montana Department of Livestock's authority over wild buffalo. We must also insist that wild buffalo are treated with respect like wild elk in Montana. And you can get more information and information on how to volunteer with the Buffalo Field Campaign. They really need folks out in the field right now. I know it's cold, but they have warm cabins and yummy food. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Read all about volunteering with them. Once again, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here is the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Operation Nemesis campaign update. We are now just over a month into our 11th Antarctic Whale Defense Campaign, Operation Nemesis, with the motor yacht Steve Irwin and the Ocean Warrior currently patrolling the Southern Ocean Sanctuary to stop illegal whaling. After just 3 weeks, on December 22nd, the Ocean Warrior discovered one of the Japanese whaling fleet's harpoon ships hiding behind an iceberg. Caught with its harpoon uncovered, the Yushin Maru was clearly in the middle of hunting for their self-allotted 333 minke whales. Interrupted from its hunt, the harpoon vessel tried trailing the Ocean Warrior instead, but was quickly outrun by Sea Shepherd's new fast ship, a first in any Southern Ocean campaign. Finding the harpoon ships is a mixed blessing, wrote Ocean Warrior's Captain Adam Meyerson in his commentary, "The Hope Dies Last." It lets you know the fleet is near, which is a huge relief, but now the real prize, the marine slaughterhouse, that is the Nishin Maru, knows where you are and it will never be found. The harpoon ship will relay your position to the rest of the fleet and they will simply move to another area. A week later, on December 31st, the security ship, the Kayu Maru 7, was spotted by Steve Irwin's helicopter and they promptly did a 180-degree turn to change direction. This ship, doubling as a krill research vessel, is owned by the same company as Japan's illegal whaling fleet, the Institute of Cetacean Research. On New Year's Day, despite the low visibility weather conditions, the Steve Irwin's helicopter successfully located the Yushin Maru No. 3, another harpoon ship in the Japanese fleet. Operation Nemesis is off to a good start. Despite harsh conditions and days of heavy fog in the Southern Ocean, Sea Shepherd's vessels have managed to quickly locate half the Japanese fleet despite having twice as much area to cover than in prior campaigns. While the search for the Nishin Maru continues, morale remains high in the stunning Antarctic surroundings where whales, penguins, and seabirds have been captured on film by the campaign's media team, reminding the captains and crew what Sea Shepherd is there to defend, conserve, and protect. Quote, in previous years, the Sea Shepherd has always been able to find the Japanese whaling fleet and stop them from getting their full quota, unquote, said Steve Irwin Captain Wayanda Lublink. We have done this with one ship and at times up to four ships. Even though we have only two ships this year, I'm convinced that we will succeed again. We have one thing the Japanese whale poachers do not, and that is the passion for our life-supporting oceans and for these sentient, beautiful whales. It is this passion for life that will always triumph over greed and destruction. And a new Congress is pushing to end wolf protections. In this story from Biological Diversity News, the incoming Congress is wasting no time going after gray wolves. On Tuesday, a bill was introduced to strip Endangered Species Act protection from wolves in Wyoming and the Great Lakes region. If that happens, hundreds of wolves would be vulnerable to state-sponsored hunting and trapping. The bill's architects also included a poisonous provision that would exempt the new law from any legal challenges. This bill promises to undo hard-earned progress toward gray wolf recovery that has taken years to achieve, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Colette Adkins. Without federal protection, hundreds of wolves in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Wyoming will once again suffer and die every year. And a suit has been filed to protect California species from massive sprawl. The 8,000-acre grapevine development planned for California's San Joaquin Valley will create a new city of 12,000 housing units and destroy habitat for 36 rare species, including San Joaquin kit foxes and antelope squirrels. So last week, the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies sued over the project's approval. This project would also pollute Kern County's air, worsen the climate crisis, and drain billions of gallons of gas of water from the overstressed Kern River, said J.P. Rose, a center attorney. An ineffective polar bear plan downplays climate action. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had last finalized the polar bear's recovery plan, the species' official roadmap to getting off the endangered species list, on Monday. While the plan acknowledges that climate change is driving polar bears toward extinction, the plan fails to make an aggressive reduction in greenhouse gases a core part of the strategy for saving the species. In fact, the plan's recovery goals are so weak that they allow for an 85% drop in polar bear numbers, meaning the possible disappearance of Alaska's only two populations. Polar bears are starving and drowning as their sea ice melts away, but this toothless plan shrugs off the one solution that will save them: carbon pollution cuts, said the center's Shea Wolf. And that's all the time we have for the news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. on Freak Radio. You can listen to WNMB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Friday at 5:30 in the morning, or KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. You can listen to WLSL 92.7 FM in Dade City, Florida, where you will hear the Earth First Update Sundays at noon. Or you could go on the web to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, that's GDPRNashville.org, GDPRNashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m., and you can also find them on TuneIn and Spotify. And always tune in to Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, because you might hear the Earth First Update sometime when they manage to play it. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous versions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.